Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
It is the summer of 1912 in a very hot convention in Chicago, Illinois. A woman known throughout the world as an active and generous person, Jane Addams, rises to nominate for president for the Progressive Party, a former president of the United States, Theodore Roosevelt. This is a moment to begin to consider three great personalities of the early 20th century. In a new book, The Approaching Storm, Roosevelt, Wilson, Adams, and their clash over America's future. Neil Langto is the author. I welcome Neil. I congratulate him. And we need to define who these three people were in 1912 that associated all of them with progressivism, and they themselves were keen on that title, this new thinking in America. Neil, congratulations and good evening. Jane Addams at that moment. Who was she, and what did progressivism mean for her? Good evening.
Good evening, and thank you for having me on the show. It's funny that Jane Addams is so forgotten today, when in 1912, when my book begins, she was probably one of the most well-known women in America, maybe number one or number two. I think Helen Keller might have her beaten out at the time. But she was this individual who had made her name by establishing Hull House in Chicago, which was a settlement house to sort of minister to the poor and the immigrant community in Chicago. And that put her on the map, because that was something that really had not been done in the United States before. And from there, she became a very significant force for liberalism and for reform in the United States. Basically was involved in almost every reform movement. She was involved in the suffrage movement. She was involved in child labor, a consumer issue. She was involved in the NAACP. So she was someone who had gotten her name out there, and the American public seemed to accept her in that kind of role. In 1912, when the Progressive Party was established by Theodore Roosevelt and his followers, after Roosevelt was denied the nomination by the Republicans, this new party was set up, and Jane Addams decided to throw her lot into politics, which some people felt was wrong, that, you know, she should be above politics. She's sort of this social work do-gooder, but should not get herself sullied by involvement in American politics. But she felt that the Progressive Party was pushing for all the things that she wanted and had been behind for years, like women's suffrage, like an end to child labor, like minimum wage. So she decides to cast her lot with the party, and she obviously attends the convention, and she's going to second the nomination of Theodore Roosevelt at that convention.
Jane Addams comes from an intellectual background. She was denied her full rights because of the period, late 19th century, when women were isolated from normal college or university or medical studies. But she arrives at that moment, nominating a former president of the United States, who we will see in the course of our investigation of these critical 4 years, 1914 to 1918, the war years, we will see that Theodore Roosevelt and Jane Addams, they share the idea of progressivism, but very little else. So Theodore Roosevelt, in 1912, as he's nominated by the woman in white, Jane Addams, he is still the Rough Rider, and the portrait hangs in the White House. But he's gone through a transformation in these last years after handing off the White House to his chosen successor, William Howard Taft. He's been around the world. He's been to Africa. He's been to South America. And he claims that he's become a radical. What did progressivism mean to Theodore Roosevelt at 53, Neil?
Well, Roosevelt had really moved to the left. I mean, he was a progressive while he was president. But I think he saw the way the country was turning in 1910, 1911, 1912, and he's basically pushing for things he had never pushed for before. He's getting much more aggressive as far as corporate reform. He comes out flatly for women's suffrage, which a lot of politicians are not willing to do. He's going to pretty much endorse much of what long-time progressives like Jane Addams had been advocating. So whether it's a political ploy for Roosevelt to move in that direction or he sincerely believes it, he feels that this is the way the country's going and he's willing to move in that direction. So when he takes the reins of this new party, the Progressive Party in 1912, it is something that's going to be quite different for American politics. And the progressives actually thought that there was a chance that their party could be like the Republican Party had been 50, 60 years earlier, where suddenly this offshoot, this new third party becomes the second of the two-party system. So the Progressive Party, a lot of progressives thought maybe we can become a Republican Party, maybe we can destroy the Republican Party, because a lot of the Progressive Party was made up of disenchanted progressives within the Republican Party who left to join this new entity. And Roosevelt had a great deal of respect for Jane Addams, and he even said if he was elected president again, he would put her in the cabinet. And that would have made her the first woman in the cabinet before Frances Perkins in the 1930s.
The third progressive at the moment is the governor of New Jersey, formerly the president of Princeton University, today we would say rock star of a scholar, Woodrow Wilson, a man who was born before the Civil War. All three of these progressives were born before the Civil War. These are antebellum babies. Wilson is 55. He has come to the candidacy because William Jennings Bryan doesn't run again. He chooses Wilson. The party bosses choose Wilson in a very hot convention in St. Louis. What is Wilson's version of progressivism as he runs for election for the first time, Neil?
Well, Wilson was someone who was more concerned with the economic side of progressivism. He was more interested in potentially breaking up many of the great trusts or monopolies in America and sort of bring us back to some sort of Jeffersonian way of life in the United States. Whereas Roosevelt felt that it's not the bigness of these corporations that makes them bad, it's their behavior. We should penalize their behavior, but not necessarily their size, where Wilson believed the opposite. I think Wilson was less concerned with social reform issues at this time than Roosevelt was. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why Adams wasn't that excited by Wilson's candidacy in 1912. And Wilson had a fairly short political background at that point. You know, this is a man, as you said, had been a rock star of an academic, then goes and becomes president of Princeton. And from there, the Democratic bosses in New Jersey said, let's run him for governor of New Jersey. He gets himself elected, which I don't think anyone thought was even feasible. He goes from there to becoming nominated for president. So he's a very, very short political career. And he finds himself running against Roosevelt in 1912. And then, of course, William Howard Taft is the third candidate that year.
They're intellects. They're important intellects because they're each of them big readers, but they have a different approach to the knowledge. T.R., for example, the man had a memory. He could remember things forever and cite them and quote them. Jane Addams, what was she as an intellectual? What did she favor at the time? Did she talk about it? Did she read widely?
She did read extensively. She was someone who read just about every kind of topic, and she was also a very prolific writer. She wrote on a number of subjects, and she had written about pacifism, which we'll get to at some point. That has been one of the issues she had written about. But she'd also written a lot about social service and social science issues. I think her intellect was certainly the equivalent or not superior to the other two gentlemen. Probably, as I mentioned in the book, the most impressive in person would be Roosevelt because he had this freakish memory. I mean, he talked about it. He actually could remember the pages of books and where he saw a particular fact, and then he could retrieve it. I mean, he was a computer before a computer existed. Wilson was also obviously a very brilliant individual, but he would say he labored a bit more when he read books and he labored when he wrote. There were some people even say that there might have been a little bit of dyslexia in Woodrow Wilson, which is interesting for someone who accomplished so much in his career. But all three of them were extremely educated, extremely brilliant individuals who knew a lot about the world and were interested in the world. And I think in some ways that separates them from American politicians today who don't have that kind of background typically that we see in 1912.
They also knew each other intimately. They'd crossed paths often over the years. Wilson at the with then President Roosevelt, they'd met Neal's reporting in 1896 on speaking tours. Jane Addams knew T.R. very well and knew Wilson as well. So we're looking at three major celebrities, all of whom have embraced a new kind of politics, progressives. But the war, the Great War, is about to fall on them and all of America, and it changes this case. The book is The Approaching Storm, Roosevelt, Wilson, Adams, and their clash over America's future. Neil Langtow is the author.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.
Does Friendly have a taste? If it does, it's probably like Hello's peppermint-flavored anti-plaque and whitening toothpaste. Brush away plaque, show tartar who's boss, and remove surface stains to naturally whiten. Hello's thoughtful and flavor-forward products make brushing your teeth feel like a confetti-filled bathroom dance party. So say hello to Hello with the always cruelty-free, never tested on animals toothpaste that's made to spread smiles. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.